My son, Randy, moved to Florida when he was 27 as part of a continuing recovery program. He had gotten sober here in Baltimore and thought it would be a good idea to continue his recovery in a sister program that they had down in Florida. And he enjoyed quite a bit of success, both in his life and in his recovery, and built a pretty great life for himself down in Florida. And around the 8th year or so, 10th, maybe somewhere between the 8th and 10th year that he lived down there, it was abundantly clear that he had relapsed. I had a lot of denial, and it's very easy to lie to your mom when you live in another state. But one day I got a private message on social media from someone who said, "I know you don't know me, and I hope it's okay that I'm reaching out to you. I don't think your son has as much time as he thinks he does. I actually think he's going to die. My name is Kelly, and I found you because he told me his mom's name was Kelly, too." And in that moment, any shred of denial that I was still holding on to about how sick Randy was completely shredded. And I was really excited that this woman wasn't going to let him go down without bringing in reinforcements. And I finally had eyes on the ground down in Florida. So we quickly became friends, and we quickly started to covertly find ways that we could save his life and get him back into recovery. She finally found him. She called me one day and said, I can't reach him. Some guy named Peanut has his phone, and I know that's not that guy's real name. That has to be the name of a drug addict, and we can't find him anywhere. She drove around for hours, and finally she found him in a convenience store. And he said, "Thank God you're here. I need your phone. I have to call your mother. That poor woman probably thinks I'm dead." She was scared to give him her phone because then my phone number would show up and he would realize what she'd been up to. So she asked him for the number. She dialed it and he called me. And he said, "Ma, I know you've been worried about me. I lost my phone, but I am fine." He was anything but fine. Within a few weeks, we were able to convince him to come to Baltimore and get back into recovery, and I had a short window. My plan was to fly down there, get him, fly him back. So I flew down there, and as soon as I landed, I called him to say, "I'm here. I'm here to save your life." And he said, "You know what? I'm not ready. I have a lot of work to do. If you could just maybe go get yourself some lunch, I'll be ready in a little bit." And I had a really bad feeling. I choked down a Caesar salad with some dry chicken on it and quickly called him back and said, "Okay, we're going to go. We're going to go back to Baltimore now." And he said, "Mom, I'm not going to make it. I'm so busy." And I said, "I need to see you. I'm not leaving Florida without seeing you." And he said, "Great, bring cigarettes and a pizza, please." So I went to the place where he was living, which was an empty warehouse. He had a small office off to the side with whatever he had managed to save jammed in there. And there was a small bathroom in the far corner of the warehouse. And as he walked towards me, I was kind of stunned. He was emaciated. And he said, "Sorry, I have so much work." And I could look beyond him and see there was no work. You know, his work was acquiring crack cocaine and lying a lot. And that's a full-time job. I left him, and I think I cried all the way to the airport and all the way home, and probably until I fell asleep that night. But I did get him home 4 days later. And when he arrived at my house, he slept for 3 days. He got up only to grab food almost like a zombie and to go to the bathroom, and that was it. But on day four, we had an agreement that we were finally going to get him in treatment, and I was pretty excited about that. So on the morning of day four, I was a little surprised at 5 o'clock in the morning that he was up and so ready to go get help. So I came downstairs to the family room where I heard the TV, but I spotted my shoes by the back door. The backs were broken. They were muddy and wet. And I looked at him and I said, "Did you walk down the street in my shoes?" And he said, "Yeah. You know, they don't sell drugs on Schwartz Avenue anymore." And I said, "Nope, they don't sell drugs on Schwartz Avenue anymore." And then I realized his demeanor was a little off, and it occurred to me, I had thought to get all the drugs out of my house, but I had not remembered to get all the alcohol out of my house. And I ran downstairs, and I saw all the bottles lined up, and I touched them, and they were empty. So I came back upstairs and said, "Are you ready? You ready to go to treatment? You ready today?" And he said, "You know what? Today's not feeling like a good day." And I said, "Honey, we have a deal. I can't have a crack addict living in my home, and you're here to get sober, so let's just do it." And he said, I don't think it was a good idea for me to come home. I'm probably gonna have to go back to Florida." And I said, "No, it's okay. It's okay. Let's go get clean. Let's get you clean." It's amazing how, as the mother of someone with an addiction, we really want to fix that. We really, really want to fix that, and we can't. So he said, "No, I'm not ready. I think it's best I go back to Florida. Actually, I'll get clean in Florida. I want to be with my sponsor. I want to be with my friends down there. I know what I need to do. And just, if I can't stay here for a few days and chill out, then send me back." And I was pissed. And I promptly made arrangements for him to fly back in a few hours. And when I walked out of the room to do that, and when I walked back in, he said, "Mom, do you think you could cut my hair?" And it was about 7:30 in the morning, and we walked out on the deck. I had never cut my 38-year-old child's hair in my life. The grass was just glistening, and you could smell the becoming of fall. It was October. And he sat down in a chair, and one of his favorite things was always, ever since he was a little boy, was for me to rub his head. And I rubbed his head, and I cut his hair. And in that moment, we were just a mom and her son. He wasn't suffering from addiction, and I wasn't suffering from fear and the powerlessness. It was a really beautiful moment. And what I knew and he knew was, regardless of this illness of a substance abuse disorder, there was great love. I didn't feel shame for myself or for him. And when we were finished, we got in the car, and I grabbed his hand. And all the way to BWI, I kept saying, "You can change your mind. You can change your mind." And he kept saying, "I know, Mom. I know, but it's really best for me to go back to Florida." So we hugged each other tightly at the airport, and he got back on the plane. And as soon as he landed in Florida, he sent me a text that said, "I never should have left. Thank you for everything, Mom. I really love you. I'm going to be fine." And a year later, he was found dead from an overdose, crack cocaine and fentanyl. And a lot transpired in that year. But the best thing about that year is that he knew he was loved, and I knew he loved me. And I was able to co-found with a friend a nonprofit organization called Love in the Trenches, because we know that parents who have children with substance abuse disorders are walking in the trenches. And we are here to provide support no matter what the outcome, because when you are an addict, there are only two outcomes, recovery or death. At Love in the Trenches, we're here to walk you through that with great love. And you can find us at loveinthetrenches.org. Thank you.